to be honest. Back in those days, training like a caveman, it was super fun. I love it. Speed in Spain was no develop at all. Like, I came here in 2017 to Madrid specifically because they built there the first wall in 2017. Of course, at the same time, I was training. With who? With nobody. Okay. How? Alone. Everybody thinks that we don't get injured, injuries in our fingers, but no, we get the same.
Welcome to another episode of the That's Not Real Climbing podcast. I'm your host, Jenny, and I'm excited to introduce my guest for today, Eric Noya. If you're not familiar, Eric is an accomplished speed climber from Spain. In this episode, we'll learn about how politics destroyed climbing in Venezuela, what it was like starting over with life and training in Spain, injuries in speed climbing, and we'll get his thoughts on other speed climbing formats like relays and yearly route changes. I hope you enjoy this episode with Eric. Real quick, I'm excited to announce my new sponsor helping make this podcast episode possible, Mad Rock Climbing. I got fitted with their brand new line of high-performance shoes, the D2.1s. They just came out December 6th, but you might notice a few of your favorite GOM climbers are already wearing them, like Oscar Beaudran from Team Canada, and also me. This is the first time I've gotten to wear their shoes for an extended period of time, and I'm actually super impressed with the grip of their in-house rubber, and of course, the famous drone heel that everyone says is the cheat code to heel hooking small edges. Feel free to message me if you have any questions about the shoes or sizing, and you can use the discount code NOTREALCLIMBER for 10% off your entire Mad Rock order. Info will be in the description. Back to the show. How are you doing today? Did you like train today earlier? I know you mentioned showering.
I'm fine, thank you. I went to the gym this morning. I had a upper body session, and yeah, then I ate at the same facility where I train. It's like a athlete facility that we have here in Barcelona. So I ate there, then I went to the market, I bought a couple of stuff, then came home, showered, and now I'm here.
Is this like a training center kind of thing, or is it just like a regular gym?
No, it's like a specialized facility for athlete training and development, especially for Olympic athletes. So it's like a sponsorship, but that's the way, that's an easy way to see it, but it's a sponsorship that we have the athletes here in Spain, so we can go to a super cool facility without paying some extra money. And yeah, there we have for eating, we have physiotherapy, we have of course the gym, and even the sports inside. We had the climbing gym, but the climbing wall, sorry, but it was rented. So now we don't have it, but as you can see, it's a very cool facility to train, and there is the possibility to live, and I lived there 1 year.
Whoa.
And now I have another spot. Yeah, it's like a crazy training spot. We have like three in Spain this big.
Wow.
And it's a methodology.
Why'd you move out? Sounds like a great place to live.
I moved out because I wanted to live alone, and because I started a relationship with someone, so it was not possible for her to live with me in this facility, so I decided to go out with her.
Okay, that's a fair reason, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's just get into how you started climbing and competing. And also one of the Instagram questions that came in was what inspired you about speed climbing specifically?
Oh, that's so nice. Well, I started climbing when I was 8 years old. The first time I tried was in a birthday party with a friend, but it was very special because, this time it was in the rocks. So my first time climbing, it wasn't at an indoor gym. It was it was outdoor. So that was super nice. For me, I felt amazing. I loved it. And the feeling I got is that it was very easy for me, and the other kids were a bit scared, or it was like difficult to do the moves. And for me, climbing was like very intuitive. So I liked that. Everyone was like, oh, I did it good. I cheered and stuff. And I like it. But I was very small. So it was like only one time. But then my mom was skipping traffic in the hometown where I grew up. And we went on a different way that we are not used to. And I saw a climbing gym. I had no idea that we had a climbing gym in my hometown. So I told my mom, like, okay, I want to do that. And she was, like, not so happy because she's a little bit afraid of heights. And I had to beg her, like, for 1 week. And then after so many days pushing, like, please, mom, take me there. I would love to try. She said, like, okay, let's go there. And I tried, and it was, like, love at first sight. I just fell in love with the sport, with the environment. I came from swimming, which is a very competitive environment. And then I ended up in this climbing gym where everybody was so friendly. They wanted to help me. And I don't know, it was like home. It felt like home, to be honest. Like the same feeling when you got with your kids at the school, but while doing a sport, you know? So that was kind of a nice feeling. And that's how I started, basically.
And then when did you start doing competitions?
Well, in this gym, like they had this philosophy where you do all three disciplines, like lead, speed, and boulder.
So you had a speed wall there?
No, because I was like 8 years old. Like there wasn't even official speed lanes. Oh, okay. And everything. The speed competitions were on-site. Like it was like lead. You went to an isolation zone. Mm, this is very funny. Okay. You went to an isolation zone. Then you had like 6 minutes to read the route. And then you started racing. So it was a different sport because like you had to adapt on every round. And of course, you have to read the route, how you're going to jump and stuff. Then you have to adapt on each round and improve the method, so to speak, to be faster. And that was very, very fun. It was the old school kind of competitions. Yeah. The speed route started in 2007.
Okay.
And gotcha. Yeah. And it arrived to Venezuela like 2 years before that. So imagine I touched that route when I was 15. Or 16 years, so yeah.
Did you always feel most inspired by speed climbing then, or were you more interested in bouldering or lead?
No, I had the same passion for all of them. Like for me, when I was a kid, it was like everything kind of the same, different, but the same. It was climbing and I had fun doing all of them. For me, speed climbing, I felt always more competition on it, and that was nice, you know, when you are growing up racing with your friends. That was very funny, and I love that. Also, I had bigger influences that went out to competitions and did pretty good in international competitions, and for me that was a lesson, that's something I learned, that I could travel around the world competing. And like I saw that environment since since I was starting to grow in the climbing community. So I saw an opportunity there. But I had the same passion for boulder and lead, and I trained them very hard too. Just that then for going to international competitions, it was easier to, or we were better in general in speed than in lead and bouldering. Like, of course, the competitive level in Venezuela was very different than the competitive level in Europe. So we get usually more fundings with speed than with lead and bouldering. But that was back in Venezuela, of course. Here in Spain is a different story. It's just the opposite, which is very interesting. But I think I'm a very particular case because, yeah, I have been in touch with all three disciplines since I started to do climbing. And yeah, I only stopped doing boulder and lead 5 or 6 years ago, maybe, when I started to compete like super, super hard, something like that. But until then, I did all three. And yeah, that was kind of a resume of my speed climbing history.
Then in terms of competition, I saw you only started competing in IFSC in 2019. So at that point, I guess you were like 25 around that time. Why did it take you so long to start like competing internationally?
I think I'm not sure if this still like this, I guess yes. But if you go to the IFSC, there is two profiles of Eric Noya, one for Venezuela and one for Spain. So you probably went to the Spanish profile, but you can go to the Venezuelan profile and there are also some results. So yeah, I started competing since very, very young age. Like I said, in this gym, I don't know, like the philosophy was, yes, learn to climbing and have fun and everything, but it was also like for going to competition. It was very, very different than nowadays big climbing gyms. You know, this was a super, super small spot. We call it the caves. You know, it was a super dark place with super old holes. You know, so it was a very different story than we know from climbing and competitions from these days, you know. So I remember I was probably like 9 or 10 years when I did my first competition. Like I started climbing and 6 months after I was already competing. It was like super youth competitions and I had to go with older people than me because in my category there was no one or they were new people, so it wasn't fair. So yeah, I started very, very young. And because of that, I like normalize competing. I start to have fun with it and I just didn't left the competitions. And once again, for me, traveling around Venezuela first was very nice. For me, it was an adventure with all my friends, knowing all the people, climbers from other regions from Venezuela. That was very fun for me. And I wanted to keep doing it. And I did. I started then doing international competitions when I was 15 years old. And actually, that was my first international competition. No, wait a second. I don't know if I went to some South American Cup before this IFSC Youth World Championships. I'm not sure if I had some regional in South America before this. But like the first event or the first major event for the IFSC that I remember was the Youth World Championships in Valence, France, back in 2000, I don't know when. I was 15 years old. And that was the first time I touched it like a speed route with the official speed holds. It wasn't the official route because it was too hard still for the youths, but it was my first international competitions with the hold. And I remember that I moved before this competition 2 months to another region in Venezuela because there was the official route. So we wanted to start training it.
Did you move in 2019 then?
No, I moved to Spain in 2017. I moved in 2017. I did my first national competition in 2018. And actually, that was the first national competition in Spain with the official route as well. And I won that competition, and that was the first time I was Spanish champion.
Oh, and congrats.
Yeah. 2018, thank you. And in 2018. And yeah, then on 2019, because of this competition, I started to go to my first international competitions with Spain.
And I guess what was the purpose of the move?
I think Venezuela was in a very dire situation, and like in political, economical, society terms. And I wasn't having fun. I wanted new things for me, and I wanted to have a better quality life and to I don't know, try to succeed, you know. But this country was very hard to succeed, especially in climbing. So I decided to move.
I don't really understand what the situation was like in Venezuela at the time. Can you just like give a brief overview of, I guess, like what was going on?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, this is like a very personal point of view. My people might disagree about this. But yeah, once again, this is an opinion. For me, in Venezuela, we had a dictatorship. The first one was Hugo Chavez, and then the second one was Nicolas Maduro, just after Chavez died. They were using all the resources from this country to stay in the power. And believe me, that's a lot of resources. Like, these guys had a lot of oil. Oil, diamonds, gold, I don't know, whatever. There are even evidence that they were trafficking with drugs. So they just did everything to keep in power. And one of the goals was make the other people poor, so it was easier for them to keep in the power. So they just centralized everything and destroyed whatever didn't make them stay in power. So, like, imagine a society with no rules and with no economic growth and stuck in the past, you know? So, like, as a climber, there was, at least for me, okay, this is personal, maybe other regions, other people had a different story, but my story was that I didn't get a lot of funding from climbing. It was very hard to live from climbing. We didn't went to a lot of the competitions. It was very hard to compete. So at a certain point, I was like training for nothing, and I hated that, you know. I also felt that I had level. And, you know, when you're young, you have a lot of power. And somehow I lost that time. I don't think I lost it, sorry. I think that just I moved everything a little bit further. But I sometimes think about that, especially watching about the kids that now are pushing so hard on the competitions. I think about myself and I say, wow, what if I was there all the time? Maybe the story would have been different. Nobody knows. But once again, that was one of the problems of living in Venezuela. So imagine a sport institution, corrupt, centralized. We weren't an Olympic sport, so it was very hard for climbing, but also it was very hard for living in general. Like, all the industry got destroyed. Like, you had to be with them or you had to be fucked. So I decided that I didn't want I wanted new things. I wanted to live a little bit of an adventure, new moments for me in my life. And I decided to move. And it was crazy because yeah, I saw that everything was going bad with climbing. So I said, okay, let me focus with my studies. I continue with my economics career. But then I realized that I stopped climbing for a couple of years. Oh, wow. And then I realized that I wasn't happy with my life there. So I said, okay, I'm going to Spain. Why Spain? Because my dad's roots are Spanish. So I have the Spanish passport since I was born, because my dad was born in Vigo, which is a city, a port city near to Portugal. So there is a lot, and I am Spanish. Okay. So I had also some family here in Madrid, and this was the first family where I went to. I call them my saviors. This is, of course, exaggerated, but I appreciate them so much because they opened to me the doors of their home when I was in this situation. So for me, these people is my family. It's my godmother. So yeah, basically, that's why having the passport and having family, of course, was the main reason to move to Spain. And then when I arrived, I wasn't sure what to do with my life. I was a little bit lost, to be honest. Like, I don't know if continue with my economic career. I didn't know what to do. I even started to learn and to prepare some proof to be firefighter here in Spain. It's like a very good job opportunity here. So I decided to try. I didn't know what to do. But, you know, climbing for me has been always a pain reliever, not only physically. Actually, physically, it only led me with a lot of pain. But yeah, for my pain. Yeah. For my soul, it has been always like a pain reliever. So, I don't know, I have been related to sports always. So, for me, I just have never stopped doing sports. And moving my body is something that I really enjoy, that I really like. It's very important for me. So I just came here, and while I was looking what is Erik Noya, I was keep climbing and doing sport. So that's when I ended up Spanish champion. Then I knew people here that wanted to start to do something with speed, because speed in Spain was no developed at all. Like, I came here in 2017 to Madrid specifically because they built there the first wall in 2017. Like, imagine, that's very, very old for me. Like, zero. I came from a country that did a lot of stuff for speed, and we had a decent development, and yeah, everything went to hell. But like, Spain was the mecca for climbing. Having zero for speed was very impressive for me. So anyways, I started going into this climbing wall, the first in Spain, and some people of the Madrid Federation wanted to learn about it, of course. And then some kids were interested. And yeah, so I started to be involved with the speed climbing scene here in Spain. And then what I just told before. Then 2018, Spanish champion, and then I started slowly, very, very slowly, to get every time more involved into everything. And of course, the biggest change of my life and everything was Moscow 2021, when I ended up second in the world championships of a official Olympic sport. That was like the main change of everything.
And I guess I'm kind of surprised about, how much investment Venezuela had in like speed climbing and climbing in general, because we just don't really see them that much on the international circuit.
Yes, that's crazy. Okay, I'm very happy that you say this, because maybe it's about time to tell the story, you know? But back in those days, Venezuela was a very, very strong country. I can easily say that in South America, we were the strongest. Maybe Ecuador with
could argue with me, and yeah, maybe I'm wrong, but Ecuador and Venezuela were the strongest. Okay, so our scene was very nice, very intense, and we had this like Soviet approach, you know, where the indoor scene was very competitive, and we went even to international competitions. This first generation gave us a lot of funding. People that went and won the Rockmasters. I don't know if you remember this competition in Arco. Those were very important achievements, and they just not increased the budget, but they were also a reference for me. You know, I saw this when I was 8 years old, and it's that generation that made me. So we own them very much, and it was a very, very important generation, because I'm not an isolated case. You have the Leslie case, which is also competing for Spain, comes from Venezuela, and she went even to the Olympics. She had an Olympic diploma. She's also from this school, this generation. So even I don't remember the exact year, but beginning of 2000, Venezuela was traveling with a delegation of 20 athletes or something like that. Yeah. And for many years, we had in San Juan de los Morros the best facility in South America. Easy. Yeah, I remember that when we went to Pan Americans, our biggest competition was Ecuadorians and USA, of course. So, especially in Burle and Lead, no, in speed, we were, I don't want to brag, but we were very good. I think we had a lot of Russian, Chinese influence, maybe, or the fundings for doing results.
And so I guess like what happened since then, you think just like the lack of funding that eventually.
Yes,
happened?
Of course. Like this big political chaos just went to all the layers from the society and the economy. And like they spent all the money like crazy. So at a certain point, we were able to do some trips and some competitions, which are the ones that you see in my old profile. But then suddenly everything stopped. Like they centralized so much the power that they changed the laws of sport so they can keep with the heads of all the federations from many federations in Venezuela. So we didn't have our own organizations, so to speak, in a certain period. And of course, this period was pure darkness, no internal federation. So we had no competitions, no money, no organization at all. It was like a black hole for Venezuela. To be honest, I don't know how is the situation now 100%, but I know that they are trying to rebuild everything, and there is a team now working to put all the pieces again together. And we saw them for the first time last year, I think, in some World Cups. And this year, they want to join also in a couple of World Cups. So I'm very happy about it. But it was like that. Like we had a peak. We were nice there, and then.
Jeez. So it wasn't like a slow deterioration. It was just like immediately one day just went away.
From my point of view, it was slow. But in a history period, it was like this quick.
Yeah.
Of course, because I grew up, I went to some competitions. And then, I saw a little bit my friends going to competitions, whatever. But then when I was 16, 17, then they didn't take us to international competitions. And then 2014, no competitions. Then 2015, no national competitions. 2016, complete darkness. 2017, I said, screw this, you know? So it was like every year a little worse. And then suddenly it was nothing. Mm. It was nothing anymore. Crazy, because I still went to the climbing gym, of course, and I kept climbing. I kept watching my friends. Many of them started to flee, and that was a sign for me, like, okay, if everybody's leaving. And then many friends also were doing good outside, like they had climbing jobs or different from climbing or something related with ropes and heights, but everyone was thriving. So for me, that was a sign that I had to do it as well. And it was the best decision ever. I should have taken it way before, to be honest. But
hard to move. So
it's very hard to move. Yeah. And I trusted also like a change in Venezuela. So I fought for it. And I was living very nice with my family. And I loved the environment there. So it was a lot of attachment. And yeah, it was hard for me to let go. But yeah, after everything happened, I think that I should have moved before. Way before.
Yeah. How was the move to Spain? I think that was another Instagram question that came in, just in terms of daily life and training.
Yes, I arrived to my godmother's house, and you get a una pensión. I don't know how to say that. Like when you retire?
A pension, yeah.
A pension, right? Like I got a smaller pension. And it's called, the translation would be like, pensión del emigrante retornado. It's like foreigners that come back, pension.
Oh, okay, I see.
So I received like a little funding. With this, I paid a gym to go to training, but like a normal lifting gym. And I made contact with the Federation of Madrid, thanks to a friend that was living in Madrid, and they wanted to know me, and we did a first session. Once again, they had that was the first time they were watching a speed route, you know. So suddenly a guy from Venezuela comes and he knows about the route, and I started climbing there. They saw it and they like it, and this person from the Madrid Federation, who nowadays, funny story, is the vice president of the Spanish Federation, she wanted to teach the kids and to have a team of speed in Madrid. So she said to me, like, okay, Eric, first join the team. Of course, we want you to compete for Madrid and give some lessons to the kid. So I got passes to the gym, thanks to the Federation of Madrid. And I started to give classes one day of a month to the Madrid Federation. And I was using the funds that I received from the government to study for the Firefighter Academy. But at a certain point, this pension, of course, it's over. So that's when I start to work in a proper climbing gym. And yeah, I stopped to do the firefighter stuff. Like, I did the test to get in. I didn't approve. It is very hard. It's very competitive. So I said, like, okay, I don't know, later, but I need to win money. So I started to work in a climbing gym. That was like the first big step to become a 100% climbing related worker and living person.
Okay.
So yeah, I started to do some certain day classes for a gym, whatever, working with kids. I did everything what you cannot imagine, like watching holds, everything. So, giving food, everything. And then working also with the Spanish Federation and training, of course. At the same time, I was training. With who? With nobody. Okay. How? Alone.
Wow.
There is a super funny story. Like, nobody, well, the little kids wanted to do speed climbing, but they had like classes once a month, or I pushed them to go for free to train with me so I could climb as well. So they had like extra classes, but then it was another day of the week, you know, from this whole month. But of course, I wanted to train every day. So I was pushing everyone to train, let's go to speed, whatever. And then just a little guy showed up. He weighed like, I don't know, 18 kilograms, 20 kilograms, whatever. The story is that he was climbing, and then, you know, I needed to train so much that I accepted to climb with this little boy. So he started climbing. I was belaying him, and everything was fine. But then we switched it, and when he belayed me, we did like a flag. Like, I started to go down, and he started to wait up.
Yeah.
And then he had to go to rappel down with the greedy. It was like, now I'm telling the story, and it sounds dumb, but in that moment, it was so crazy. And then, you know, it's those stories of the daily struggle that I had to do what I love the most, or what I like the most, that is speed climbing and and training. You know, that was the environment for me for those days to train in Spain. That was like the beginning, and super hilarious. Of course, it makes me so proud that now we have a proper speed climbing team center. And everything, and every in training center and everything. Yes, of course.
Yeah, to course. Do what you have to do.
Yeah. But it was super slow started, and so small steps, you know, that it's crazy.
Yeah, I do kind of wonder like where you would be if you had like the training center from the start.
Yeah, well, I imagine. And the same resources, that would have been crazy. And from moment one, you know, wow. Yes.
And then I guess for those who aren't super familiar with like speed climbing training, how does it differ from boulder elite training? Is there like anything unexpected that you feel like you do as a speed climber?
Something unexpected? No, I don't think so. Actually, the opposite. Like, it's because, and that's the difference between boulder and lead and speed, that we train on the same route now. That changed the whole history of the sport, and of course the history of the training. So that's why you don't expect anything new, because you just go to the same route every day. But to be honest, for me, every day is a challenge, and it's different, because even though it's the same route, you always have to improve something. So that's the part that it's very, very alike from boulder and lead, I think.
Do you prefer that, like having to make these like tiny little increments on the same route every time?
Yes, sure, of course. I love it. It's super fun. It makes it challenging, and of course, different every time. You know, it's, to be honest, it's the part that it's most related to climbing than just going there and do X amount of repetitions. That's the point of view that lead and boulder climbers many times don't understand, that we are also improving in terms of climbing on every training. It's not like going there and just climb the route.
Was there ever a point where you just didn't know how to improve, or is there always stuff in the back of your mind of like little changes you need to make your time better?
No, back in those days, I had no idea how to improve. Back in those days, it was going up as fast as you can. It was a different story. Yeah, it was super caveman way of training, of approach of everything. So yeah, of course you try to change some stuff to climb faster and better, but we had no idea how to do it. It was all intuitive. But now, from a couple of years from now, there have been a huge change, and the training have been changing, and now I think we know how we should do it.
Hmm.
Okay. That's probably also making the biggest change of in terms of times in the circuit, and that also makes like it's the biggest reason why we see so many young people thriving so fast, because they are getting the most advanced and the most developed training methodologies for this discipline. And I think that's so interesting, so amazing, and I'm so happy about that.
And from all those times in the past where you were just running up the wall like a caveman and not really focusing on any particular technique, do you feel like you picked up any bad habits from doing that are hard to break? Because I feel like you practice something a bunch of times, maybe you practice it the wrong way, it gets way harder to fix that since you've done it a bunch of times that way.
Yeah, definitely. And that's actually something I'm struggling with even nowadays. Like, I have to fix all the things from my past in order to keep up the pace of the circuit and of the younger generation that it's coming. But I want to be honest, back in those days, training like a caveman, it was super fun. I love it. Once again, the climbing community is always so nice that I don't regret it. Like, it was super, that was delicious anyway.
Okay, and good to hear.
Nowadays, having to fix all my shit, it has been also a blast. It's super fun. So I think it's very, very cool that all this happened to me, and it's somehow kind of the process, and this make me connect with the people, with the climbers from here, from Spain, and with the community here, and I think that's a huge privilege, you know, and also give me the opportunity of strive despite my age, you know, because I'm already what we can call a mature climber in the circuit.
Good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, so knowing that I still can improve something on the technique that can make me improve my times, it's a bit of a good sign for me, of course.
Yeah, what are some of like the bad habits you're trying to break?
Wow, I fixed many. For example, on the on the middle of the route, the skip from hold number 8 to hold number 10, I was doing like a weird S move, because we didn't match on hold 11. We usually went to left. So before we went to far right on this skip, and then we jumped to the left to grab both holds. But now this both holds doesn't exist. And we know that we have move more straight. So, like, to make a resume for the people that doesn't understand what we're doing on the to be more user friendly, so to speak, basically I was doing like S, like a snake, like a
right.
Yeah, like a lizard while climbing, and now we know that we have to try to keep it up straight. So basically, I'm changing all my movements, all my muscle memory, which is the hard part, to make a correct movement. It's like I knew how to dance, but now I have to learn how to proper dance or to change the moves to make it better, so to speak. And yeah, I was a good dancer. So now you change me all the moves, and it's been weird. But it's a fun challenge once again.
What's one that you're working on right now to break?
Oh, the top section. Top section is my nightmare.
Okay.
If you compare me with the rest of the circuit in general, in all the competitions, it's very easy to see that I'm very fast at the beginning, and then at the middle they catch up, and at the end they smash me. So. I gotta keep up until the end.
Okay. What's the issue at the top? Is it a technique thing, or you get like tired?
Yeah, no, I think it's technique wise more. Like once again, I'm going to more like I'm going too much to the left side. No, I'm going too much to the right side, and then that makes me do a move to the left side. So my gravity, my mass gravity center is moving to left and right so much that makes the moves even harder, and of course it takes me more time. But then you say like, okay, but why you do it correctly? Well, because breaking these habits or understanding these moves is not that easy. Like, I promise you, I have thought about it. I have dreamed about it. I do it constantly. I'm 24/7 with these moves in my mind. And sometimes I wake up and I said like, okay, I dreamed about it, or I imagined this move and I'm going to the wall. I know how to do it and I will do it. And then I just go and it doesn't happen like that.
Oh, I totally get that. Yeah.
So it's crazy. It might sound crazy, but it's the way it is. It's the process. Like, if it would be so easy, everybody would be doing 4 or 5 right now, you know?
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. I think like all climbers can relate. You like think about yourself climbing it. You think you have like a great idea and you're like, I'm going to go do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then it just doesn't work at all. And you're like, oh, this is why it didn't work. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. You end in the same loop from the day before where you didn't understand anything. Yes.
So, I mean, you're still definitely improving. You had some really great personal runs and, yeah, like personal bests, even in like OQS earlier this, or wow, I guess it's not this year anymore, last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had like really great personal bests in OQS, but you didn't manage to secure an Olympic spot there. What are your thoughts reflecting on that time? Please excuse this brief intermission, but if you're interested in deleted scenes from this episode where we talk about his favorite competition moment and also whether or not it's possible to become a speed climber without knowing how to rock climb, do consider helping support this podcast on Patreon. Some other perks include a membership pin shipped to you after 2 months, prioritized guest questions, or the ability to submit video questions, and more to come. The proceeds go back into the podcast to help me break even, and they help me improve the experience of the guests. If you'd like to help out non-monetarily, liking, commenting, and sharing always helps a great deal as well. Back to the show.
To be honest, I gave it all. Like I tried with all my heart. I was disciplined. I think that I did all that was in my hands, even more. And I don't know if this was the reason why I didn't make it, or maybe I have no idea, but I put everything on stake and I did an all in. So I think that was brave of my side. I think that I fought it very hard and that it wasn't easy to kick me out. Like the people who kicked me out, they had to fight it with their teeth. So of course I'm proud of that, and for me it was an amazing experience, so I'm very grateful, to be honest, of everything, even of the outcome. I learned a lot of this process, so I would give it a 9 out of 10 because I didn't qualify, of course. but I live it with a lot of passion, and I think that was the goal of it.
Okay. I mean, you still...
Next time qualifying.
Yeah, hopefully. You still continued like competing like right after that. You didn't really like take any break after OQS, did you?
Yeah, I only missed one competition that I really didn't want it to go. It was like the same weekend of the OQS, which was a little bit crazy, but yeah, then I started again because I think that life is like this. Not much to add, to be honest. Like life is like this. You just keep going, and sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But my family still love me. when I go to the gym, the people I care still there, the people that I like still with me. So for me, in the end, that's going to be always very important, and I still have it. So it will be very selfish to not to think about them, you know, when something bad happens with the climbing.
Is that like your motivation, you would say? Because I can only imagine it must be very hard to, I don't know, find the drive to get back into things, or when you're feeling kind of burnt out or you worked for something for so long.
I mean, like, I knew that it was a possibility not to qualify. So I thought about it before. Like, okay, what if I don't? Well, if I don't, I don't. So I think when it happened, it was a shock for me. But then I was able also to process everything kind of fast. At the same moment, I have other stuff that motivated me. Changes in terms of coaches, of federation stuff, in terms of life, in terms of many things. So that made me also push. Like, I was curious about what was the future bringing to me. So I try to focus more on that than other stuff. And also, at the same time, I lost a huge amount of money because not qualifying to the Olympics. So I had to solve other problems.
Okay.
Rather than and keep thinking that I didn't qualify.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, the money issue is always a big one.
Exactly. But also, something that happened, I want to tell you this, because for me nowadays, this is the highlight of the fact that I kept pushing. I didn't understand it in that moment. But then we had a competition in Madrid, the first four-lane format event. And we have a new coach now in Spain. To make the story short, it was the first time the coach was meeting the athletes from Spain to present himself and whatever. And like, they said to him that for them it was very impressive, and it was like a inspiration that I kept pushing, and that I was still competing, and that I was giving the face no matter what happened. You're still there pushing and with a smile. They said to him that it was very meaningful for them, and they learned a lesson, so to speak. And the coach after said this to me, and that meant a lot. Like, being a good inspiration, or being a, better saying, being a real good role model for the generation of speed climbers in Spain. Wow, really filled my heart. It was a very good sensation. And it happened unexpectedly, you know, because that wasn't my intention when I just kept competing. Also, I have a saying or I noticed in my life that I say that you relieve pain with more pain. And you might think that this is crazy, but when you have a lot of pain and soreness in the body because of training, the best thing to do to keep to let this pain go away is go again to the gym.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I said, like, okay, keep competing, vamos.
Okay. I don't know if I agree with that one personally. I don't know if I can do that. But,
well, to be honest, it pays off. After a couple of months, I don't know, it was 1 or 2 months after LQS, we had, it was just right before Olympics, we had the European Championships, and I did good. I did third there, and it was very, very important competition and very important spot. So now I think it was a very smart idea to be cold-blooded and keep going, definitely.
Yeah, no, that's good to see. And I'm glad that it paid off. Okay, so for the future, thinking about the upcoming season starting soon, what's your goal for the upcoming season?
Well, try to keep it up with the pace.
Yeah.
Why not? Like this is my when I set my goals, I try to, of course, aim high, you know, of course. So my goals for this season, I really want to be again in the top 10 of the world ranking. I managed to be this year, so I want to keep it up with that pace. I would love to be top 10 also, or even better, top 8 in the world championships in Seoul at the end of the year. And those are like my biggest goals, also because in terms of money, they will give me the most value. Also, another personal goal for this year for me is, of course, break the 5 seconds barrier, and I want to be able to do my first 4.
Yeah. In competition or like also in training?
No, in competition.
Okay. So in training, you've done it?
No. Ah, okay. Sorry. Yes. No, I never done 4 seconds in my life. Usually I have better times in competition than in training.
Oh, really?
So nice. Yeah, I'm expecting to see my first 4, fingers crossed, on competition. Yeah. Yeah.
Hope to see it this year. Do you think for most people they have better competition results than training results? I guess I'm kind of surprised about
that. No, I think it depends. I think it has to do with your age. I think there are many of factors. But at a certain period, I was the type of better times of training, and then everything changed, and now I'm more of the competition PB kind of type.
How do you think that has to do with age? I know you mentioned age like a couple of times. You are kind of one of the older athletes. So
I don't know if it has to do with age. To be honest, I think everyone is very, very particular. Everyone is very different. Just that I live it this way, and it's very interesting. Like, I can relate both type of person somehow, because it happened to me or both ways. But I don't know. We can let that. The science maybe make some tests and decide.
And speaking of age, in terms of being one of the older climbers, do you feel like speed climbing allows for more longevity as an athlete? Because I mean, I guess it's kind of less injury prone than, say, maybe like bouldering.
No, I think it's very hard to tell. Speed climbing is also very, not harmful, but it's very intense. I had 2 broken pulleys.
Oh, wow. Really?
3 partial broken pulleys. So we have in the end the same injuries that people from Boulder and Lead as well. So I'm not sure if there's a difference between disciplines, and also I'm not sure if I'm better because of the age, or I don't know. I don't know if the age is something that reliable stuff. Maybe because of, I have thought about this a lot, okay, to be honest. And everyone travels very different. I think that because I didn't had many opportunities when I was very, very young, I'm trying to push as long as I can now that I'm an older athlete. So maybe there is other people that burn the etage. We say that in Spanish. I don't know if you say something similar in English. Like, you burn your period differently, so then in the future you want something else, you know. Maybe somebody that already compete a lot with, I don't know, 25, they did everything they wanted with 25, then they say, okay, it's over for me, it's easier to step out. But for me, I didn't have that. So that's maybe why I'm trying to push harder and to keep being an athlete for longer time.
I think in general, your story is inspiring, and it's like a lot of hard work, a lot of dedication, like never giving up when things get hard. I guess, do you have an idea of when to give up, or like an idea of what retirement would look like for you?
Yes, of course. Sure. I mean, when I see that for me, it's impossible to keep it up with the pace of the international competitions, I will lower my level to regional competitions or national competitions, and then probably, I don't know, but I mean, when I'm not performing, I know that many people and many stuff is giving me resources. So when these resources are not good enough to make, for example, one final, two finals of a World Cup in 1 year of the circuit, then of course that could be like a sign, and I will step out to maybe let other people get involved with that risk.
Okay.
And also I think that I have a lot of people now around me, around the Spanish team, that will also help me to show me when it's the moment, you know?
Okay, that's good.
But for me, I'm giving results. So yeah. If I'm giving results, everything is okay. But I'm very honest and clear. When those results are gone for medium time, I'm already having a lot of fun teaching the new generation, teaching the kids, and being there with the community makes me feel it. So
that's good to hear.
I'm not afraid to step out. That's what I mean.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Yeah, I'm always kind of worried when I hear people. I don't know. It's like, it's really good to have dedication, but then I'm always worried, like, for these people who are super dedicated, how they'll feel once once it starts to go away. But it's good that you seem to have a very clear like head about what the future might look like.
Yeah. Also, I know that stop competing doesn't mean that I have to stop climbing.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
It will be different if you say to me like, okay, now you don't compete, you don't climb anymore. Okay. It's a different story, you know, but I will keep climbing. So everything's going to be fine.
And back to the injuries you mentioned, I didn't know that people got pulley injuries from speed climbing.
Oh, yes. This is a lot. You may ask their whole circuit, and everybody's having pulley issues.
Really?
As well.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's interesting because lead and boulder, no, it happened also a lot to us. And in boulder and lead, there is a lot of there is a little people making studies. Imagine for speed, everybody thinks that we don't get injuries in our fingers, but no, we get the same. I think even if it's a jog, okay, the hold is a jog, right? But when you go so fast, you don't grab a jog. You just put your finger and put as much pressure as you can. And that makes you make like a crimp. You know, we are not grabbing the hold, holding it, and then pushing. No, no, no. It's just with the tip of the fingers, yakata, and trying to go up. So I think we still put a lot of pressure in on tendons, and of course then in our pulley, and then, yeah, we have all those tendinopathies, same like in boulder and leap.
Wow. Okay. I had no idea. That's actually really interesting.
So also, for example, in many moves, you have to like hold tight a flag, for example. And when you're doing this, you're applying a lot of strength on your fingers. And actually that was one of the case why I broke one of the pulleys. So now that I have a voice, first, all the people should know that we have the same injuries than lead and boulder, and that it will be also very interesting to study this. Because what I noticed also with my injuries is that the protocol for lead and boulder is very different than the protocol for speed. So to go back to the wall.
Yeah, what do you have to do differently?
For example, I think that because of the way we behave and we move, I should have rested longer, you know? When you are a lead or boulder climber, you can say like, okay, just do super easy moves on jogs as a way to heal, you know, like for therapy. But in speed climbing, like our moves are already set, you know, like there is something on your brain that because you know the movement or what everything, like I was always pushing too much.
Yeah,
you know,
that makes sense.
Always pushing too much. So definitely the protocol has to be different. She said to me like, okay, go to the speed wall and just climb like in lead, super easy. And I promise you, I wasn't even running.
Yeah.
But it's different. Also, the person that was treating me, she was a climber. She was a specialist. It's the best person in Spain. But she have never done speed. And she hasn't been on the speed wall for 1 week to see what we're doing. So we're working on intuition here. And it will be nice to have more scientific tools, resources, or whatever, or knowledge.
Did you ever just do like bouldering or lead to try to fix your injuries?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did a little bit of climbing. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that's super interesting. I had no idea about like speed injuries. I thought it was pretty safe, but I guess that's just as someone who's like, I've only touched the speed wall a couple of times, once with Albert when I visited in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
And I did it in like 40 seconds, so it was all jogs. yeah, that's good to know. Huh.
Well, there is a big example. It's Piper Kelly from Team USA. She competed at the Olympics with a broken pulley.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
That's crazy. No, it doesn't look good. Everything, like, I can't imagine. But it's, once again, it's like a very clear example that in speed we have this issue.
Wow.
Very, very hard.
Okay, that's good to know. Okay, so outside of, I guess, climbing and speed climbing, I'm just thinking back to like retirement as well. Anything that you like doing outside of climbing or speed climbing competitions?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I really enjoy the adventure. I really enjoy living. So I don't have something specifically in my mind, like another sport or something. I did a lot of kitesurfing. In Venezuela, maybe I start to do kitesurfing again. But to be honest, I have like no path in my mind. And for like for my future retirement, to be honest, I'm thinking now, this day, today, something related with speed climbing. So,
okay.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if it's going to be as a coach working on the federation. I just finished my sport management master degree. So
congrats.
It could be anything related with sport events, sport facilities. It doesn't have to be with climbing, but you know, it's hard to think about something else.
Right.
Also, I'm working on a small personal project which I'm very happy. I'm creating like a climbing clothes and accessory brand.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So I'm really getting into like making the designs, creating the web, creating some hoodies, some t-shirts, some stickers, some stuff related to climbing. And also I'm doing stuff related with speed climbing for older lead and rock climbing there is a lot of stuff on the market, but for speed climbing, there is nothing. So there will still be stuff from Boulder Elite and Rocks, of course, of everything. I don't want to close it just to one niche. But the highlight is that I'm going to include stuff for speed. So I'm currently having a lot of fun, like I said, thinking about the designs. Oh, this is cool. This is going to work. No, this is not going to work. And I received some material. Oh, I don't like this. I want to change this. Oh, now this is broken. I have to. So it has been a fun project, to be honest.
Okay, really exciting. I can't wait to see it. Is it going to come out soon? Or?
Yeah, it's going to come out soon. I hope that maybe, I don't know, when is this podcast going to be out live?
I think early May, actually.
End of yes, sure. That's cool. Okay, perfect. I thought it was soon. Yes. Perfect. By then, please, everyone, go and visit climbgurus.com. It's a super nice apparel and climbing shop. And for sure, by that time, it's going to be ready. I hope, actually, in the next couple of weeks, start doing the marketing campaign and everything.
Wow, exciting. Okay, I will leave a link in the description so people can take a look. That'll be awesome.
Let's see what happens.
That's cool. How did you get the idea for this?
To be honest, first, they saw some stuff from speed climbing on the competition, and it's very bad. And there is nothing for climbing. And also, like I said, I lost a lot of money not qualifying to the OQS. So now I'm working in plan B, C, D, 1, 2, 3, A, you know, like everything. I'm trying to keep it up. So this was one of the ideas. And I like to do some drawings, design. And now with the Mid Journey, it's crazy the stuff you can do with the AI. So I was having fun. And then everything start to come up together. I have a friend who is a graffiti writer, a graffiti painter, and I was talking to him what I was doing. I really love the stuff he do. Actually, he's also a climber, and I had a small wall in my house in Venezuela where I climbed, and he went always to do graffitis, and then I'm a very close friend, and he was the one who told me like how to make the business feasible, you know? Like, oh, bro, yeah, like I said, like, yeah, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, but I have also this money issue. And he's like, okay, you can do this. So I really want to do quality stuff, nice stuff, stuff that the people like. Like I said, there's nothing for speed, and I think there is a niche of nice people that may need good apparel. Also, I'm trying to create a business of this and to create some income to keep speed climbing, because that's also nice that I feel it's like the community helping the community, you know, because with that money, I'm going to keep doing speed climbing, of course.
Awesome. I can't wait to see it.
It's worldwide shipping, so it can go everywhere. Everybody in the globe can buy and get the link and everything.
Cool. Okay. I guess those were all the questions I had. We had a couple of Discord and Instagram questions come through that we'll go into. First one, I think you kind of were hinting at this a little bit earlier. This is also maybe a little bit, I don't know, might be a little controversial, I guess. What's your opinion on the latest changes in FEDME, I guess that's the name of the federation, FEDME, the Spain federation.
Wow. That's very controversial, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So what's your opinion on the latest changes there, particularly the firing of David Masia from the Olympic selection for 2028? A little controversial.
Little controversial. I mean, it's not difficult, but I don't know what the people want to get with this question. You know, that's the weird part. Like, I could be honest. I could say what I think, but I don't know if people is gonna misuse this. So I'm being very cautious about it. So I think I will not say if I'm like my feelings about it. I will not say it. I just want to say that from a speed climbing perspective, all the changes are being good because we are now more open. I was like, it was part of the job. I was like in this facility, super focused for the Olympic qualifiers, for the Olympics and everything. So we closed ourselves a lot. And now I feel that I'm open and that I'm working again with the little kids, that I'm open with the teams from other regions in Spain, that I'm developing speed, you know, like I'm adding my grain of sand in this national community, and that now makes me happy. But this was going to happen either with David or without him. So to be honest, for me, it was a little bit of the same if he stayed or no. You know, like, this is, are they a bit selfish? No. I don't want to say it was the same. No, I don't want to comment about speed, about Boulder and did, but speed climbing now is perfect. So that's what I want to say about our latest change here in the Federation. I think we're working good. We're working together. We are working with a specialist, Mateusz Miroslav, which is the gold medalist for the women's and world record holder as well with Ola Miroslav. So he's a super crazy good coach, super nice guy, and I am really having a lot of fun training with him.
I don't know too much of what happened. Is it like a really long story?
No,
we don't have to get it.
No. It's not. I mean, there after every Olympic cycle, there, it's like classic. Just that people want to make a novel about everything. You know how it is. There was every Olympic cycle, there is sports elections, like federation elections. They gotta help new elections. So the federation was changed. There was a new plancha, like a new guy trying to come. He won. He kicked the other people out. And this new federation decided that David wasn't going to be the seleccionador, which is the person that chooses who goes to each competition. So I think that one of the mistakes is that people are thinking, oh, David is not going to train anymore. No. He's still a trainer. And I think that he's a very good trainer. He still trains Alberto and many other athletes. And for that, he's doing, like, you can see his results. He's doing a perfect job. But that has nothing to do with the job of choosing the people that goes to this competition or that competition.
Okay, gotcha.
David has now less power to choose who goes to this competition or that competition. Well, yes, but maybe we can give the chance to another person. I don't know. Like, it's not bad or it's not good. And that was the whole story. But what happened? That this doesn't apply to us, because David, before even he was changed or kicked out or whatever you want to call it, he already incorporated Mateusz to the team. So speed climbing was already split before everything happened. So that's why it's meaningless a little bit to us. We have nothing to do with that anymore.
Okay, good to know that it's not like a really too controversial, at least.
No. I'm just cautious because you know that people love to speak a lot.
Rumors,
they're bored at home, or Eric said this. To be honest, like, all the stuff that I'm saying here, they are not meant to harm. They are not meant to like, I want to create the most positive impact on my community, to be honest. And that kind of chit chat, if it doesn't create positive impact, omit it. That's what, that's my message to the people. Don't pay attention to that.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. We'll move on then. So next question, what do you think of all the ideas to innovate on speed, like relays, changing the route every year, 4 climbers at a time, anything else?
Well, I think that relays is a very nice format. We tried in Madrid and the result was amazing. I think everybody loved it. We were able to do many runs, like the competition in general had more sense, we had more opportunities, it was faster. That format was very, very nice. About changing the route every year, I'm not sure about it. That's a tough one. To be honest, we can create a new sport. Like, we can do on-site speed climbing or classic speed climbing. And then we have people who is very good on creating new paths, so to speak. And then we have people who is very good on be strong and develop it so much technique that goes up super fast. But creating a mix doesn't make a lot of sense, you know. Having the world record meant a lot to us, to the Olympics, to all this sport that we are developing now. So taking that out, it would be messing it up. Like, it would be a step back for us. So I wouldn't advise to change the route, but if we want to see again that classic format, then we have to create another sport and make, like before, speed climbing on site. That could be also very cool. I'm super pro into trying new things, into keep pushing, like everything, create content, everything that may give us visibility and grow opportunity and change even the game. For me, that's a very positive aspect.
Okay, makes sense. Thanks. Okay, next one. Why did you decide to run the Chinese top when no one else was? And can you give like a brief explanation of context of what that is?
Okay, yeah, the Chinese top, like the classic move, you grab food chip. Okay, it's very hard not to speak in speed climbing terms.
I think that might be okay. Yeah.
Okay. In the end move, people were grabbing a hold like a food chip, 18, 20, 90, and then top. And then I switched to going to the left. In that moment, it was very weird movement, and like nobody knew if it was better or no. But to me, it was very, very clear that it was more straight to go to the top. Like, you didn't have to make a curve. Like, it was, yeah, it was a little bit of intuitive. Like, I saw it, and for me, by intuition, it was much better.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I said, like, okay, I just have to do it.
And so it worked out for you. I know you mentioned the top has always been hard, so.
For everyone. Everyone switch it up in the ending of the season.
Okay, so everyone's doing it now?
Yes, that was the thing. Like, I was able to see a game changer stuff very, very early.
Mm.
But for me, once again, it was intuitive. Like, I saw the movement and I tried, and for me, it was very logic. Like, yes, of course, this got to be like this. So people was a skeptic, but for me, it was no error margin. And it was crazy because a lot of people, the world record was with other technique. So the people were like, why aren't you doing the world record technique? You know, it didn't make sense. That's why it was very crazy for me to change it.
How long did it take you to like just start incorporating that one instead of doing what you were doing before?
I think about myself as a very adaptable person. So it took me, I remember, like 1 month. I was like training it for 1 month, and then I was able to put it on the competitions. But then I switched from foot chip to hold 15, and that took me a little bit longer.
Wow. I'm just now realizing how little I know about speed climbing, because it goes so fast. I don't even notice people doing different techniques at any point on the wall. It's just like, it's only 5 seconds. There's not much.
Yeah. And it's also crazy because I don't expect you to know the numbers of the hold. So when I'm speaking, I'm saying a number, I'm on a part of the route and you have no idea where I'm on the route. So it's very hard.
Yeah, it's really hard to explain.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Also, exactly.
I got to study that myself too. Okay. Next one. Do you have advice for people starting out speed climbing?
Well, first of all, have fun. Like, try to have fun while doing speed. That's the main reason why we do it. And try to climb straight. That would be my advice. Try to avoid going from one side to the other.
And what about in terms of like training?
In terms of training, be cautious. It's very easy to break your fingers. There is no studies about it, but it happens. So hear your body whenever you feel pain on your fingers. Be cautious. And sometimes, I don't know, like less is more, but also train hard.
And last question, how was training with the Indonesians? Some people noticed improvements after.
Oh, that's really good to hear. Well, training with Indonesians and being in Indonesia was life-changing for me. I think it's very, very nice people. Like in this country, they have somehow the same temperature, the same humidity, and the same kind of feeling I had in Venezuela. Also, the noise, the architecture, many stuff remind me of Venezuela, and they are also super nice. So I felt a huge bond with them, and we had the opportunity to spend more than 1 month with the team training in Santikas in Jakarta. And of course, this super nice environment makes you want to push, and training with the fastest guys of the planet also makes you improves a lot. That would be a very cool advice for the people that it's starting to do speed climbing. Try to stick yourself with better people, and stick with better people. That's a very good advice, and of course that's why it was very not easy, but it was you were able to look that I improved after 1 month. Imagine 1 month training with Vedric, you know. It was like the same. I went to Salt Lake City last year and training them with all the beasts that you have there in Salt Lake City made me push so hard that I hope that you also will see my improvement on the season. But I think I will highlight those two stuff in Indonesia, the people and the level.
Did you ever feel like intimidated training there?
Not intimidated, but of course I knew that I had a lot of work to do.
Okay, yeah. Always good to learn from, yeah.
Yeah, like I felt that I was a couple of years behind them. But that's okay. That like I said, it made me push and it made me admire them a lot. And that's very nice.
Okay, that was the last question. Well, there were a couple of other people just talking about how great you were in the Instagram question answer box. Pedro said Eric's a great guy, always helping others.
Oh, and that's so cool, Pedro.
One person, I don't know if you know this person, Lily Climber.
Leslie, yeah, bro.
Oh, Leslie. Okay, Leslie. Yeah, she just asked, "How can you be so handsome?"
I'm gonna ask her because I follow all your beauty advices, Leslie. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I just figured that they would want to get the shout out there.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So that's all the questions I had. Thanks for joining me today. Any last minute words of wisdom you want to get out there?
No, just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity, for giving me voice. It was very fun. I had a blast. I hope that once again, the people enjoy this podcast and that I'm open to anyone who wants to keep chatting with me on my Instagram. Just send me a DM or whatever. And of course, thank you all the audience for taking their time and listen to us having a fun conversation.
I will link all of that in the description. All right. Perfect. Thank you. It was amazing to talk to you.
Perfect, Jeannie. I have a great time once again, and thank you very much.
Thank you so much for making it to the end of the podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe if you enjoyed. Otherwise, you are a super fake climber. If you're listening on a podcasting platform, I'd appreciate if you rate it 5 stars, and you can continue the discussion on the free competition climbing Discord linked in the description. Thanks again for listening.